you doing? Good to see you. Thank you for having me. I'm Eric Goodman, and it's an honor to be part of your podcast. I've been super excited about doing this, and I'm looking forward to our conversation today.
As am I, Eric. Thank you so much. It's been really great getting to know you over the last, I want to say a few weeks or months. I've known who you are for a long time. Our paths have crossed and we've been on similar journeys, but I think we finally both just decided to get intentional and meet. And ever since we've met, I've just been really, really glad that we have.
Feels like family. I feel like I've known you forever.
Exactly. We have a lot of the same friends, and that's part of it, I think, because our friends talk about, you know, they talk about me to you and they talk about you to me, but you know, through the beauty of LinkedIn and just, you know, a lot of great community friends in common. It's really great. I feel like I've been a friend of yours for a long, long time. Let me introduce you a little bit more to our listeners and our viewers today. My guest today, as you are now surmising from this brief conversation, is Eric Goodman. The From the Heart podcast is presented by the First Bank Center for Family-Owned Businesses. Eric is a family business owner, a philanthropist, a devoted family man, and as you've just heard, my new friend. Some things about Eric that our audience should know so we can really set the table for today's discussion. And we'll dive into a lot of these details as we go. So as mentioned before, he's the president, CEO, founder of Mountain View Services Incorporated, which is a leading, I got to look at my bigger screen here for a second. So those that are watching, I apologize. I'm going over here for a second. A leading healthcare supply and distribution company serving more than 500 care facilities for developmentally disabled adults and children throughout Southern California. In 2022, Mountain View Services was honored by the Civic 50 in Orange County as one of the 50 most community-minded companies in Orange County. A great organization that does that, and know quite a bit about the Civic 50, and congratulations on that.
Thank you.
Eric serves on the board of several prominent nonprofits, and we'll certainly get into those as well. Just a few is the Inland Empire, Ronald McDonald House, the Developmental Services Network, Fontana Foundation of Hope, and the American Heart Association of Orange County and the Inland Empire. In 2020, Eric won the Unforgettable Foundation Heart Award of the Inland Empire. I love this. The foundation's mission is to enable low-income families to give their children a dignified burial and to educate parent and children's caregivers to confront, control, and conquer the primary risks to children's health and wholeness. I want to get into that in a little bit as well. As you know, Eric, and as my listeners know, most of the podcast conversations I have touch on the what that people do, but it's really more about the why. That's the name of the podcast, From the Heart. It's not just my last name. It's the theme of the podcast. In addition to his work and philanthropic efforts that you've heard a little bit about and you'll hear a lot more about, he has a degree in digital photography from Cornell University. And if you go to NewportBeachSunsets.com, and we'll put that in the notes of the show, you're going to see some amazing photography that Eric has done over the years. I've subscribed to the site, fantastic pictures. And yes, I'm probably going to buy a few to frame to put behind me here in my office. They're pretty amazing.
I can make that happen.
All right. You know a guy, huh? Right on. Eric is also, and we're going to get to the interview here in a second. He's also more fascinating, but wait, there's more, as they say. He's a classic car enthusiast. He's the president of the Vintage Volkswagen Club of America. Didn't know that even existed, which is the largest vintage VW club in the country. He and his wife, Roxanne, who they've been married nearly 30 years, reside in Orange County, California, have two children, Vanessa and Grant. It's funny because Eric and I are currently enrolled in a storytelling class that is instructed by a recent podcast guest, Jay Golden, and is hosted by a past podcast guest, Charles Antis. It's kind of funny because I already consider Eric a great storyteller. So not only is he in the class with me, he should be teaching the class. So with that, Eric, your background's amazing. What you're doing in your life is outstanding. The impact that you are making on people is inspiring. So officially now, I guess I'll just say welcome to the From the Heart podcast. Thanks for joining me today, buddy.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
What I miss?
Everybody always says to me, say, how do you do everything you do? Aren't you tired? I'm usually not. But then after listening to your
You just got exhausted listening to all the things you're working on, right?
that's awesome. Sleep is not something I normally do. So we did, right? Mm-hmm. Just make it happen.
Well, you know, you just rest to get ready. It's not so much sleep. It's just taking a nap, getting ready for whatever's next on the agenda, right?
That's right.
So we could go a lot of places first, but I think I'd like to just go right into the philanthropy. I had a pastor, and I've talked about this in the past, as recently as an episode I did the other day, talk about if you want to figure out where to serve, ask yourself what breaks your heart. And as I look at where you have spent your time and are spending a lot of your philanthropic and your community time, I'm guessing there are areas in each of those that break your heart. So let's talk, go wherever you want to go. Ronald McDonald, American Heart Association, wherever you'd like to start.
My why. So do you want me to tell my background story of why I got involved with Ronald McDonald House and we can take off from there?
Sounds like a great idea.
So storytelling, obviously, Jay, as you said, Jay Golling with the Retellable helped me get my story out. I've been open about my personal life for a few years. I had partners in this business and I bought my partners out a couple of years ago. And when I did, I hired a marketing firm and the marketing firm said, we need to do some cause marketing. We need to tell about all the great things you guys do in the community. And I was totally against that. I did not want to do any cause marketing. I've never been on our website. I've never been in our brochure. I've never been external in the community in terms of anything business related. It's always just been my personal, you know, charitable giving. And so we started going back in time. It was almost like a therapy session, which is kind of like, I felt like watching some of your podcasts.
Nice.
Therapy sessions, people trust you and know you, so they open up. So Jay took me back, and now it's shared on my LinkedIn and in my company information very publicly. This is now referred to as my Forrest Gump story, which just turned into that. That wasn't what it was originally set up to be. But so when I was a young kid, I had some severe problems. I was born with a condition called Schumann's kyphosis, which is similar to scoliosis. It's just much more severe. So to give a visual about what that would look like is that would basically be like the Hunchback of Notre Dame, right? That's what it would look like if you had it's the severest form that wasn't taken care of. So there was a good chance that my life was going to be, you know, hard as I got older. So I was in leg braces at a very early age. So that's where the Forrest Gump story comes in. Because if you've ever seen a Forrest Gump movie and you know about Tom Hanks, when he's Forrest Gump, runs down that long driveway with his leg braces on. So that's a visual of what I was like as a child. Now, it wasn't quite that dramatic, but still, it was the point that I was in leg braces.
You didn't run across the country and play ping pong against, you know, world champions and meet
the president.
Didn't
have a beautiful Jenny.
Yeah, I love you, Jenny.
But the basis of the story was there. So Jake and I got on to a way to relate to, you know, what I went through as a child was Forrest Gump, because everybody visually could understand that. So then fast forward a little bit, when I was 15 years old, the complications from my condition had worsened significantly. And what had happened was the condition was causing me to be so hunched over that my lungs were starting to collapse. My rib cage was setting in on my lungs and my left lung was being punctured. So I was rushed into the children's hospital. And of course, my parents knew I had this condition. And so we talked to the doctors and said, what are the options? Well, the problem is the fix for the condition is you have surgery. You have metal rods inserted in your body. They fuse your spine. They take portions of your ribs and they use that to support your body. It stunts your growth. So once you have the surgery, you can't grow anymore. So you're done. So that's why you don't want to have it as a child, because then you'd be an adult.
Or if you told the rest of your life, right.
12-year-old.
Yeah.
So I was 15 years old. I was, I think, 5'7" or 5'6" when I went on the operating table. Of course, this was 31 years ago. So medicine is way more advanced now than it was then. This is the second time I think the surgery had been done that I had done. They cut my back open, have 550 stitches. I was in the operating room, I think 12 hours plus. I was in ICU 3 weeks. I was physically in a body cast, full body cast from my neck down to my feet for 9 months. My body was completely casted. So the only thing I could move was just my head. So I was totally, you know, dependent on somebody else, which was my mom. And so that, you know, I had a lot of time to think, in a full body cast, right? I was only 15. So I came out of the operating room and I had grew 3 inches on the operating table. So I'm currently 5'9" today with a size 13 shoe.
Wow. Feet kept going, but the rest of the body kind of started going.
Nothing
down.
Else could grow. My dad's 6'3". My brother, I think, is 6'3". So, yes, I'm 5'9". But the surgery obviously prevented my lungs from collapsing, prevented the breathing. I did have to have physical therapy to learn how to walk again. And at that time, the Ronald McDonald House wasn't there. It didn't exist. It did exist, but not at the hospital I was at, which was Loma Linda Children's Hospital. Actually, I was in Loma Linda Hospital. They didn't even have a children's hospital. Then they had a children's wing. Now they have a full children's hospital.
Sure.
So through that experience, obviously that 15 years old and going through that in your life, you know, I was in ninth grade when I went into surgery. I came out and went back to school in 10th grade. You know how kids can be, leg braces and back braces and
real kind. I'm sure that the kids were just really, really kind and loving to you.
It was tough. It was very, very, very tough. Yeah. The only positive thing was I never had to take physical education, you know, no PE classes for me. I missed that my whole school life, but
you didn't miss much.
The ridicule outside of that was tough anyway. So, you know, it was really, really, really hard. It was hard on my family. It was hard on me. So fast forward, the Ronald McDonald House opens at Children's Hospital in Loma Linda. And I was in a car club. As you mentioned, I'm massive into cars. So I was in a car club. And my car club was one of the founding donors of the house. And we were volunteering at the house. And so I got to see what the families who had kids staying at the hospital were going through. And, you know, my mom, the way it worked with my parents, my mom was, or dad was by my bedside every day in the hospital. I was never without a family member there. My mom would stay with me all day. She would go home at night. My dad would come. He would sit with me. Then they would exchange breakfast and a hello. My mom would sit and they were with me 24/7. They were always there, you know. And then when I got out of the hospital, my mom had to take a leave of work to stay home with me to care for me because I was body casted. So, you know, she cared for me at the house. My dad, unfortunately, had to leverage his business to come up with the money to pay for my surgery and put the family in a really tough spot financially where we were really struggling because, you know, it was a hard time for all of us. They wanted to care for me. But then I went to the Ronald McDonald House and I saw what these families were going through and I could relate. I knew what it was like to have a child in the hospital. I knew what it was like for your parents to have to try to hold down a job and take care of your kid, which is obviously the most important thing. And so I started volunteering at the Ronald McDonald House as a volunteer. And then we started a car show to donate proceeds from the car show to the house. We did that car show for about 20 years. I think we raised about $150,000 off that car show that we donated to the house, which was great. And then they asked me to join the board of directors. So I joined the board of directors, and this is my 2023 is my 20th year on the board of directors for Ronald McDonald House Charity in Southern California. Term limits, they've set me off for a year, put me on some other project, and then brought me back on. I was involved in our capital campaign in 2016, where we expanded the house, raised $14 million, went from 23 rooms to 54 rooms. So that was kind of my charity start, was the Ronald McDonald House. That was kind of, and my why was obviously because of my personal situation.
Sure.
And then giving back and helping others has just been something that's been a part of my life, you know, since I was 15, based on all those other things you mentioned. That's why I do everything I do, is because of my personal background.
Sounds like your mom and dad gave you a great example for stepping outside of themselves and being there for you. Did you see them in the community or in other areas? Obviously, as a 15-year-old, your world is yourself. I mean, we've all been 15. So we know that we tend to be a little bit 15-year-old focused when we're that age. How did you see them showing up in the community outside of what you were going through that has left an impact on you?
Yeah. And I didn't know, you know, when you're 15, you don't know your parents are struggling like they are, and you don't know the hardship that my situation put the family in, right? Like, now that I have kids and I own a company, I know what a struggle that was for them. For my dad, he was the sole proprietor of his own company, started it, built it, and he was trying to run a business and then worry about me. And then my mom was working, which was a partner in a company, and she had to take a leave from her business to take care of me. So it was tough. My mom was involved with the American Heart Association. She was actually a director out here, had been very involved in philanthropic stuff. My dad was as well. They did a lot of community stuff, but of course, a lot of that stopped when my situation happened. Because, you know, the surgery was at 12, but I was probably, you know, 5, 6 when all that started with my legs and back. And then them taking me through physical therapy and doing everything till I was 12 or 13, then getting diagnosed with what I had, Children's Hospital in LA, Children's Hospital here, back to Loma Linda. You know, there was a lot of trying to figure out what was going on with me. What were they going to do? How were they going to solve it? We thought we were going to have me get through my at least teens and into my early 20s before I was going to have to do something. And then the lung puncture came up and I was rushed in. And obviously that moved things up really fast. Then we were really going at full speed.
How did that challenge, those challenges early on in your life, how do I ask this? Many of us have challenges of some sort in our lives. We all have some sort of challenge, and to one degree or another, I've never, knock on wood, gone through anything remotely close to what you just explained. How did that experience prepare you for challenges as an adult, business owner, husband, father, just life in general? I mean, we all have challenges still out ahead of us that we don't know about yet. And we all have challenges. I heard somebody say there's two types of people, someone going through a crisis and someone about to. And so we all have that either on the horizon or currently going through. How did the lessons that you learned as a teenager prepare you for challenges now?
I think it did a lot, but I didn't realize that until Jay and I started storytelling and then all that came out.
Nice.
So, and then that leads into the business, which you asked, obviously. I'll share a little bit of that so that I can explain why we help when we get back. So our company is basic mission is to help others because we service, you know, homes for 500 developmentally disabled adults and children. I have about 3,500 consumers that we take care of their products every single day, from food to medical supplies and other things. And so when I got involved with the company, which I was only 20 years old, when I got involved with the company, I'm not the founder. I'm the owner now, but we've been in business about, I think, 6 or 7 years when I came on board at a very young age. So I was not that far out of my surgery recovery, and I was very limited on what I could do because of my back. I'm still on a 5-pound weight limit, and it's been 31 years. This is the metal rod, I have 2 metal rods in my back and a fused spine with the ribs, and I have plastic rib inserts. Three ribs on each side are plastic. So, my mobility wasn't great, so I was kind of limited on what I could do work-wise. So I got into sales with our company, and I knew we had a good mission because we help people. And I didn't at the time, like you said, I didn't realize until Jay pointed it out that I think a lot of that had to do with my early upbringing, why I wanted to help people. And I just didn't put the two and two together. I knew it was good to help people, but I didn't realize I had such a strong desire to help people. So I moved through the company, outside sales director, sales vice president, president. And then I bought the company and brought my partners out of the company in 2020. And at that time, that's when I decided I'd been doing a lot of community volunteering work and a lot of charity work outside of the business, but I had never put the two together. So we had operated the business, which was very philanthropic and very mission driven. Then I had my own personal life, which was very mission driven and did a lot of things, but I had never brought the two together. So once it was just me, then I started saying, okay, well, our mission is to help people. I'm in a place where I want to help people. What can we do to bring those two things together? So that's when we decided we're just going to go out into the community every single day. It's my mission. It's what I get up for. It's what I live for. We're going to find out who has a need, and we're going to see if we can address that need. Do they need medical supplies? Do they need food? Is it homeless and housing? Is it a connection, somebody I know like you, the bank, somebody that I meet? So I know you said you follow me on LinkedIn and you see my right. Schedule. Every day, I don't know what or who or how we're going to affect. I just know the more people we meet, that's what I always say, the more people we can help. And if I can in some way make the world a better place through my company and our mission, that's my purpose in life. That's why I believe I'm here. That's why I do what I do. I think if we sold widgets, I wouldn't be in the same, right? I wouldn't be as passionate about what we do, but I love what we do. I love that I can get up every single day and I can make somebody's life better through my business. And I mean, who would not want, right? Who would not want to do that?
Absolutely. No, I think I'm on a foundation with Don Reese, who's going to be coming up on the podcast soon. And Don and
my good friend too.
we're all very close with Don, and she's in the storytelling class with us. We're on a board called the Institute for Community Impact, Paskey's Foundation.
Right. I did the breakfast with you.
And I got on that. I was invited, which I'm honored to be on. But because, as you said, we're here to make an impact. I mean, when I've taught college students over the years, and anybody that'll listen, my four kids, now eight grandkids, grandsons, if they'll listen to me, I try to tell anybody around me that this life isn't about you. This life's about everybody else. We're here for one reason, one reason only, and that's to serve everybody else around us. And I see that in you. And I think that's what you're podcast guest number 80. Since I started this, I started recording in 2019, started airing these in 2020 before COVID. And the guests that I choose, if you go back through the roster of the people that I've had the good fortune of interviewing, it's people who are, and it's probably the case with everyone, but it's easier to pinpoint it to 80 guests of people who are really truly making an impact. But we're talking massive impact here. You know, the Charles Antises, Wing Lambs, Ken Blanchards, Gary Ridges of the world, and I'm leaving off 76 names by listing four. So I apologize to you, 76.
I'm honored to be listed with those names.
Well, I'm honored that I get to do this. I mean, it was an idea first, but now just talking to people like you who are out there making an impact every day. So who, you know, name names or name stories or however you want to go with this, who or what impacts you? I guess let's go with what first. When you are impacted and truly inspired, and you look at times in your life where you felt that impact on you, what's happened to create that? Can you pinpoint that?
My religion, obviously, has a huge piece of that. Strong faith. I live by example, or at least I try to live by example. I'm not perfect, nor are any of us, but I try every day to live by my beliefs. Our company has very strong core values that I set in place. Our values are, which are right behind me on this board that you can see.
For my listeners, he has the core values behind his head on the wall.
So our core values are caring, dependable, and honest. So that's what I live my life by. In my personal life, in my business, with my customers, with our vendors, with nonprofits that we deal with anything we do, it is, how do those fit in with my core values? We're caring, obviously, because that's our mission, is we take care of people. We're dependable because you can count on me and or my company, my team. You know, COVID hit, being in medical supplies and healthcare, that was quite the challenge, right? Looking back on it now, I don't know how we did it. We were selling medical supplies and we were 8 to 5 business Monday through Friday. 2.5 years later, we're a 5 a.m. to 5 p.m. business 6 days a week. We're only closed on Sundays. Wow. So, you know, it's been a challenge, but we got through it. So caring, dependable, and then honest. I run my business and my personal life honest. And sometimes, you know, it's hard to be honest about everything. There's a lot of business dealings and a lot of things that opportunities that I passed up in life because they didn't fit with my core values. And I think if I just live by those every single day and I make sure everything fits within those, I think that puts me in the right direction to live the right life. And you can, I'm sure everybody is going to hear this and you can agree with me, but when you're younger, success is money.
Yeah.
If somebody's successful, they have money. If you have a nice car, you drive a nice house, you wear a nice suit, you're successful. I believe that when I was in my teens, 20s, and 30s. And then as we get older, right, things change, attitude change, perspective changes. I just lost a friend last week that was early 40s to cancer. It's very tough. And, you know, always life is in perspective. And for me, I know for a fact, success for me is helping others. If I can help other people and I can make the world a better place while I'm here, I feel like I have been... make me emotional. I feel like I've been super successful. And to me, that's what defines somebody who is successful, is by how much they help other people.
Someone told me a few years ago, thank you for sharing that. I appreciate that. I've got other questions, but it triggered a thought. When I was running the Center for Family Business at Cal State Fullerton, which I was blessed to be able to do for 11 years, I was around a lot of quote unquote successful people. Multi-generational family business owners have become multi-generational for a lot of reasons. Some of it is luck, obviously. Most isn't. I think, you know, I like the Jack Nicklaus quote, you know, the harder you work, the luckier you get. When somebody asks him about how lucky he is on a golf course, it's like, well, if I didn't practice that shot 20,000 times, then I wasn't doing my homework. So, you know, when I hit that shot around the tree over the lake and under the, the umbrella. I've practiced that 20,000 times. So certainly the more we work and prepare, the quote unquote luckier we get and the more successful. But when people mentioned to me, man, you work with so many successful people, it got me thinking about 10 years ago, let's start talking to people about what success means. And I found from every conversation I had, success never came back to, as you said, as teenagers, it probably would have been bank account driven. None of the people I talked to labeled success as having to do anything with the house they lived in, the car they drove, the money they had. It was going back to that word again, impact, going back to making a difference and being able to do what they truly want to do. So I guess that's why I started this podcast. My why is I want to talk to successful people, find out what makes them successful. Why would they say they're a success? And it really does seem that it comes back to the difference that they're making, the impact that they're having. And that's really the common denominator, is I'm making an impact on people.
Yeah. And it's not just for me personally, it's not just the charity aspect of it. It's too, right. I know you and I talked about this recently in our class, but it is the charity. It is the population we serve, because, I'm an advocate for people with disabilities of any kind. That's my life tag, my motto, my thing. We've talked about that on my LinkedIn. Like, that's what defines me, is I'm an advocate for people with disabilities, mental disability, physical disability. We all have them. I don't know anybody that doesn't have one. It could be, you know, anxiety. It could be depression. It could be a physical issue, but we all have disabilities of some sort. And so finding out what people's need is and finding out how we can help them, you know, that really motivates and drives me on. I'm extremely passionate about it. And you and I have discussed it. People meet and talk to me, they're like, why? I'm like, well, because we all need it. The problem is that some people can't do it on their own or are afraid to. But when somebody like myself or Charles Antis, who's great at it, when we're vulnerable in the community and we say, okay, we're CEOs of large corporations. We're not perfect. We don't have it together. We have problems. Everybody has problems. But how can we make this better? I think people can relate to that. And then often I'm always thought about my team at Mountain View Services. Not only every day is it helping the people that we serve and the charities we help, but I have over 200 families who, you know, their lives, their families depend on the decisions I make running my business and the things I do. And so every day when I get up and I think about my business and my company and stuff, what motivates me to do what we do and to help is also all those people who are, you know, they're taking care of other people, but they have needs too. And so I have to make sure that we do what we can to help our internal, external, everybody.
From a demographic standpoint of those that listen and watch this podcast, most, I would say a high percentage are in a leadership role of some kind. Well, let me take that back. All of us are in a leadership role of some kind. If you're a parent or you have friends, I've taught leadership in college and I've told all my students, look, at some point in your life, you're a leader. Last Friday night, when you and your friends decided what movie to go to, who took charge? Well, I did. Okay. Therefore you exhibited leadership skills. What would you say are some of the challenges that you face in leading a team of 200 people?
I think for me, the hard part often is, you know, we're a for-profit company acting like a nonprofit because we're funded by Medi-Cal and Medicare. We support a lot of charity organizations. So I'm affected by the same thing everybody else is affected about. I just recently shared on my LinkedIn the write-up that the San Bernardino County Workforce Development did on our business, came out and interviewed and talked to me. You know, we're struggling through the pandemic with employment. We've struggled through the pandemic with supply chain. So the team of people that I'm leading, you know, they've been putting in, like most people in healthcare have been, extraordinary hours, extraordinary time because of the people we serve. So they're caring. The problem is the last 2.5 years has really, really put a strain on all of us. Like, it's really, you know, 3 years ago, I didn't have any gray
hair. Yeah, no doubt. I think
my team were happy. But you know, now it's you know, it's long days, a lot of days. And so every day I try to make sure, you know, that their wellness is there, their mental state is there. They have the support that they need. We're doing what we're supposed to be doing, take care of everybody. Pre-pandemic, I mean, everybody had needs, but post-pandemic, the needs are much stronger. Like, we all have really, really I mean, just the mental capacity, as you know, I mean, any of us that have been, you were affected by it and you got in the bank industry, you knew what it was like pre-COVID. I mean, it was, It took a toll on a lot of us. So that's the hardest part for me, is making sure my team is led in a way that they're supported and they have what they need to care for everybody that we care for.
Can you share a story or two of what inspired you internally from, you know, team members or within the company, something that over the last 2.5, 3 years that just made you go, wow, that's pretty impressive.
Things that have happened to us, like with the company, and how that affected.
Yeah, just anything come to mind. I typically I'll ask a leader in this situation. Now here we are in March of 2023, 3 years almost to the day that the world shut down. Mm-hmm. I look at what Wing and Charles have done with the California Love Drop. I look at what Tam Nguyen has done with, you know, nailing it for America. I look at what so many people have done with formal causes they've created and efforts that they launched and are still doing. I mean, Wing and Charles are still out there, you know, handing out food to frontline workers and blood donations at Antis and everything. Not necessarily those things, but just any stories internally within your team that you just thought, wow, this is pretty impressive.
Yeah. I mean, so we're providing food, obviously full line groceries, everything you can buy in a grocery store. I sell eggs, bread, milk, cheese. I distribute it all out of a big distribution center on my own fleet of trucks, all refrigerated. And then I sell personal supplies, you know, combs, toothbrushes, hairbrushes. I sell janitorial supplies, toilet paper, towels, tissue. And then a lot of our clients in our homes are tube fed on pumps intravenously. So they take formula. So nationally, you know, formula, Ensure, and all those sort of things. So I have a lot of product that we sell to people, which they depend on their life to live. So if my truck doesn't show up and it doesn't deliver, they don't have the food or the nutrition they need to survive. And in some cases, it's because there's certain things that they have to have that they can only get from a doctor. And it's on a doctor's or a prescription. It's something you can't go buy at a Walmart or a Target. It has to come through a distribution channel like mine. So if I don't show up with that product, their life really honestly could be jeopardized if they couldn't get it from somewhere else. So the pandemic hit. Of course, we're essential, obviously. Right. And we're providing a service that people need. So that first day I'm driving in what felt like Armageddon, because I'm coming from Orange County to Redlands, which is an hour and 20 minute commute to my office. There's a handful of cars on the freeway, and I'm on my way out. It's the only guy, and you know, I get here in record time, and I show up and I pull the team together and I say, I don't know what we're going to do. I don't know what we're going to do, but we're going to do something. Well, you're very aware, and everybody's aware of the toilet paper shortage and the shelves going bare and the product not being in stock and people waiting for hours and hours. And anyways, we all know what happened. I can say that we made it through the entire pandemic thus far without missing one delivery to one client at any home. I never shorted anyone a single food item, not one roll of toilet paper. I never shorted anybody. And looking back on it today, how we did it is just, I just don't even know. I don't even know how we did it. All I know is my team came together. We rallied every single day. We had war meetings and said, okay, we're on allocation. Start getting on the phone, calling the providers and saying, I know you need this. We only have this much of it. Can this get you through to this week? And the outreach from our other partners was incredible. They rallied behind me and they said, Eric, we know the population you serve. We know that they're relying on us. What can we do to get you the food? What can we do to get you supplies? And I was getting stuff delivered when other companies weren't. And then when I was calling our clients, they were saying, well, I have 4 or 5 extra of this. Can somebody over at another facility use that? And then we'd call them and say, can you use that? And we'd go pick it up at one facility and take it to another. And we just did that day after day after day. And the team just, we just rallied. And it was just incredible. The support of our healthcare industry, the support of the people that supported my business, me to my customers, it was just unbelievable. I look back at it now and I go, and I don't know how we did it. I don't know how we didn't miss a single delivery, and staff shortages and product out of stock. I mean, it goes on and on. And somehow I can tell you, and I'm really proud, we did not miss a single, to this day, we have not missed a single delivery, and I never shorted anybody one item. That speaks to my team. That speaks volumes.
Well, and just like you said when we weren't recording and you wanted to say some nice things about this host, and I'm going to edit it out if you do, I'm going to brag about you for a second. Yeah, it says great things about your team, but a team is only as great as their leader. I mean, we've seen great organizations with wonderful people, And ultimately it comes down to the leader. And you set that example. I want to ask you a question about, you talked earlier about how you went from different levels in the organization before you owned the company. And Jay is teaching me and others about not asking so many compound questions, but here I go doing it again. So two-part question. I reserve the right to make this a five-part question because there will be follow-ups to your responses. When did you realize, as you were climbing the ranks at Mountain View before you were an owner, when did you realize this is where I really want to spend my life? And then based on that, when did you make the decision and why to purchase the company?
Good question. So very early on, right at the very beginning, I often told people in the office, someday I'm going to own this company. And I had lots of people tell me, yeah, right. Mm-hmm. Sure you are.
Yeah.
Okay. Right. I mean, I just started in outside sales. So the founder of our company founded the company because he owned these care facilities. He had about 65 of these care homes across Southern California in five counties. And then in the 80s, there wasn't a Walmart, there wasn't an Amazon, there wasn't those sort of places around. So we opened our company as a distribution center for just his 65 homes. Fast forward, we got where other providers would call us and say, we love what you're doing. It's amazing. Can you provide that to us? And that's built us up to the, you know, 500 plus facilities, 35 patients today. And when I very first came on board and started, so I was working for my dad's company, who I mentioned is an entrepreneur. My dad owned and operated his own company, founded it, started it. He's still in business today. He's been in business for 43 years. I was working for him, and I was working for him in outside sales. And this was one of my customers that I was calling on. And they wanted to offer their services to other agencies. And so they said, Eric, you know, you seem to have sales. I was the vice president of sales for my dad's company. Ability, can you help us figure out how to market and sell to these existing facilities? So really early on, I just fell in love with what we do. I fell in love with our mission. I knew we had a great mission. I mean, it was unbelievable what they did in the community for people. So I really didn't have to sell anything. All I had to do was just share with people, this is what we do. And people went, well, where do we sign up?
Yeah.
So 35 years later, all those original customers that started with us day one are still customers today. No contracts, just relationships. So then I went director of sales, and the passion was strong, obviously. Then I became vice president of the company. Then I became president of the company. And then our CEO in 2012, who was my mentor, I worked for him for 16 years before he passed. He was an incredible man. He was the nicest person I've ever met in my entire life. I worked for him for 16 years. I never saw him lose his temper. Hmm. Ever, not even once. I never heard him speak bad of anybody ever. He led his life very positively. And anytime we were in the midst of crisis or anything was happening with the company or the business, he stayed positive, always, all constantly, never. I never seen that man. I don't know what he did when he left the building, but I never seen that man.
Yeah, he reserved it not, for us. I know. Yeah,
probably, not positive.
Probably the same.
And so that was my mentor in the way that I live my life and run my business, because he was always so positive. I came in every day and I knew even when things weren't going well, Hal would be, it's fine. We'll get through it. We'll make it happen. What do we got to do? Let's do it. I mean, he was just always that person, right? He was the rock. So he went in for open heart surgery, and he left the office, and he was our CEO. I was president. He said, I'll be back in a couple of weeks. Okay. He left, and he didn't survive open heart surgery. He passed Thanksgiving Day of 2012. So obviously that turned my world upside down, because my mentor, my leader, our CEO of our company, the guy who got us where we were, he suddenly passed away. So that changed the role, the reign. I had other business partners. At one point we had five partners in the business, silent partners and active partners. Then we were down to four, and then we were down to three. So to answer the second part of your question, 2020 hits. Mm-hmm. I'd always said someday I was a partial owner from since he passed in 2012, and then a more owner in 2015, and then COVID hit in 2020. So I had two business partners. They were 20 years my senior. They saw what was happening with the pandemic and what we were going through to try to provide services.
Said, I'm out.
And they basically said, we want to retire.
Yeah.
We want to retire. So most people on the inside don't know this, but we actually put the company up for sale. Hmm. So we put the company up for sale, had it for sale, was in negotiations for about 9 months with about four or five different companies. And we finally settled on one company out of state who was a healthcare company. And they were going to purchase the company and they were going to retain me as CEO on like a 5-year contract. And then they were going to expand the business and I was going to run it. So back to my faith, and you and I have talked about this at length. We were a week or two out from signing the deal. We were supposed to move forward and I was praying like I'd never prayed in my life. And I was telling my wife, what's going to happen to our people? What's going to happen to my team? What's going to happen long-term? I don't know what's going to go on beyond this. I'm going to be fine, but what's going to happen with everyone else? And I actually prayed that the deal would fall through.
Wow.
And I said, you know, the best possible thing that could happen to me would be if for some reason they didn't go through with the deal and I could have a sense of relief. And the next day they backed out of the deal. They backed out of the deal and the sale didn't go through and we didn't sell the business. Yeah, there was a various of different reasons. We were in different states. So that made it really difficult that we were, you know, it was, they were in the East Coast. We were in the West Coast. We run under Medi-Cal, Medicare. They run, there's just a lot of different reasons to, you know, it was not, you really got to be California based, I think, to do what we do and know Medi-Cal, Medicare in our industry.
Sure.
So my partners decided to sell their shares in the company to me and I bought them. And that's how I became sole owner since December of 2020. And then a year later, I bought the building because they own the building. So I bought them out of the building. So now I own the building and the business. And my mission of always wanting to own and operate it solely, you know, exists today. But I never gave up. There was times where, you know, it was a real struggle and tough. And I had other job offers over the years that I could have made substantially more money. But the mission didn't align with my beliefs and values. And I knew, I just knew in my heart that we had a great company with great people. And I did not want to see anybody else come in and change that.
What's the family business angle of the business today? Because we've had that conversation prior to this recording.
You and I talked. So our good friends, Jenny and Katie, obviously got me, thinking about family business. And then of course, a lot of the people you and I are in similar circles with, Charles and others, they're all family businesses. Wing comes from a family business and there's lots of, so my dad's always had his business. My mom had been a partner in a company and had her own business. So I was always growing up around entrepreneurship and family business, but my dad ran his business. My mom ran her business. I ran my business. So we were always separate, never integrated the three. And then in 2020, after I bought out my partners, my kids came on to start helping in my business. My daughters are marketing manager, my son-in-law working for the company some, my son, social media manager, my wife was helping out with finance. So all of a sudden we went from no family to lots of family.
I love it.
So it became a family business overnight because they're all involved now. They're all part of the business. And then my dad has started to work with the business and he's planning on retiring probably this next month. And I haven't publicly shared this with anybody. So you're the first person I'm publicly sharing this with. Jay's the only other person that knows. So I plan on having my dad's company as part of mine and my dad will retire and we'll put the two businesses together and it'll form one larger entity or company together of his family business and my family business. And we will technically be a third generation family business. We'll have my dad involved. We'll have myself involved and we'll have my kids involved. He's going to semi-retire, but he's still going to be involved. So that's going to put all three of us working together. It's pretty amazing.
That's awesome. More power to you. I think that's great. I know that, you know, there are family businesses by design. There are family businesses by accident. And then there are family businesses by divine intervention. And I think it's the latter with your company. It feels that way.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Praying that the other deal would fall through. And then the family now gathering like this together. I think that's awesome. So
yeah. Cause my dad had always said, well, what am I going to do with my company when I retire? Because I already have a company. And so then we figured out, well, why do we have to do anything? We can keep it all together and I'll continue to run and do them like I have been. Hopefully I've got another 20 years or so. And then hopefully the kids can take over and they'll continue the legacy. I hope.
I love that. Let's talk about that word legacy for a minute. Okay. So family business is big on legacy, big on impact. what legacy, and it's not the Stephen Covey, what do you want people to say at your funeral conversation necessarily, which is out of Seven Habits, which I quote that book a lot because it's one of the first books that really made a big impact on me. How do you think your kids will talk about you and your legacy? And I'm kind of leading to talking specifically about Grant, if you want to go there. I mean, I know you've shared openly on LinkedIn and in our storytelling class. I'm going to get emotional as we start talking about this, and I've never met Grant,
but make me cry.
I know your story. That's not my objective here, but I'm a very emotional guy. What do you think if I was interviewing, Vanessa, if I was interviewing Grant and Vanessa right now to ask them, you know, tell me about your dad, I'm not going to say, what do you hope they would say? Because I think what you want them to say is what they would say. So what would they say about you?
I know what they would say. They would say I'm too hard on them.
I don't know about that.
I know for sure Vanessa would say my expectations are too high and I expect too much out of people. And I've always told my kids this since they were very little and my dad did it to me, was would never give them more than I know they could handle. And I think it made them who they are today. I could have been just given the family business and my dad could have just said, here you go, enjoy. And when I graduated from school, he said, you can't work for me. You have to go work for someone else for a year before you can work for me. This isn't a golden spoon. You go elsewhere and you do something and then you come back to me and tell me if you want to or not want to work for me. So I left, went to work for somewhere else for a year, and then I came back. And then obviously came to work for Mountain View through his business. And so when both of my kids got involved, they both worked in the warehouse. They both packed orders. They both were just like anybody else. They got treated no different. They're going to work their way through. And if they want to own a company someday, they need to work in all aspects of the company and learn everything. And then they have to earn it. It's not just going to be given. And they know that. So I'm really, really tough on the two of them. My daughter, Vanessa, is like me. She's motivated, type A, very outgoing. She has a passion like I do for people. I'm sure the answer you're looking for, which I should say, is I'm passionate about my business, obviously.
I wasn't extremely looking passionate. For an answer. I just always I like to get people outside of themselves for a minute and think.
I'm sure
that are most important to them, your children and your spouse. Yes. We live our lives, hopefully. I wouldn't say we live our lives in a way that we are focused on what are they going to say about me, but it's important. I want to know that my wife's going to say nice things about me, that my kids.
I'm sure they would say I'm passionate about people and I help people. That would be my main thing, cause that's been my life's goal. And they know that we're going to Grant, which you brought up and mentioned, which I've shared openly on LinkedIn, which I'm very open about my story with my son, Grant, impacted my life. See, here goes the crying.
Well, and mine and others too, just so you know, it's a massive impact on a lot of us.
He's impacted my life like nobody else ever has or probably ever will. So my defining me as a person and who I am today has a lot to do with my son, mostly to do with my son. He's amazing. Not that my daughter's not, just right. Situation that, you know, she's always led in my footsteps. She's always been the mini me and we've always been on the same page. But so I've openly shared on LinkedIn, you know, my story, I've shared it recently. So Grant came out, when he was 15 years old, that he was gay. And with my strong religious background and faith, it was tough. It was really, really tough for me. And, you know, I had two decisions to make. Did I support my child and did we move on with life, or did I not support him? And then, you know, what was that going to do to the family? Right. Like I had a defining moment in my life and my decision was pretty much going to define his life, really, from a family aspect of it. So of course I accepted it, obviously. And I learned from it. What I didn't expect to happen, is I thought when he came out that he was gay, as I was worried as a parent for my child, like any parent would be. My first instinct, my mind went right to, well, his life's going to be difficult. It's going to be hard. People are going to give him a hard time. You know, people are going to pick on him in school.
And you were speaking from experience. Your being picked on in school was different, but you understand, you know,
but how I did not felt. Want him to. Yes,
you didn't
I
want
did
him
not
to
want
feel
him.
What you felt. Exactly.
Society. So mine was solely selfish, very selfish, that I wanted my kid to be okay, right? Like we all do. What I didn't expect to happen, which is what happened, was I did not expect that Grant's coming out and telling me that he was gay was going to change my life so profoundly. And that after that, my life today is so much better for him being in it. And because he is, because he opened my eyes to things that I didn't know existed. I was, I think we're all a circumstance of our society and about the things around us. And I was closed-minded and I wasn't open to a lot of things, and I didn't accept a lot of things. And because of Grant now, I see things way different. I accept everybody for whoever they are. I want to learn about all kinds of cultures and backgrounds and beliefs and everything, the way people live their lives, who they are, what they do. Like, I just, I'm so open to all of that now. And it had not been for Grant, I would not have been, because he accepts everyone for who they are. He sees everybody the way they are. He loves everybody from the heart. He just makes sure that people are seen for what they want to be seen or need to be seen for, and that they're supported. And so that's what I try to do every day, is I try to support Grant and everyone else, just to know that we're all the same. Nobody's different. We're all should be treated equally, no matter what, regardless of your background or circumstances.
There might be somebody listening today who has a similar faith journey as yours, similar religious beliefs, who may have to make a similar decision. What advice do you give that parent or that sibling or that friend of someone who is so hardcore on their belief system? For those, I'm just going to come right out and say it. Most Christian churches, I wouldn't say preach against homosexuality, but certainly it's not traditionally accepted like it is in our society. And I know a lot of people battle with that as a choice,
yeah, whether
one way or what have you. Yeah. So walk us through a little bit that process as much as you can, or feel open to, from, you know, yourself admitting somewhat in judgment of that lifestyle prior to Grant coming out, to today and the experiences with Grant, and how you've shifted and how that's changed and rocked your paradigm on how life really is.
Absolutely. It's a really good question, and it's something I want to get more out into public and community, and you're the first opportunity I've had to do that.
And I want to do that too, and that's part of why we're doing this here, this conversation today.
Out of sight of sharing on my LinkedIn. Yeah, it's a struggle. It's a really hard struggle, as in with anything is in life, and anybody coming out with supporting anybody that has any sort of, I'm not going to call it a disability, but any sort of anything in their life, no matter what it is, physical, mental, or anything they're struggling with, until you've been in those shoes, right? Until you've been in their shoes, you do not know. And society and the things around us, that's what we know. So that's what we use to make those decisions. And if I would have just strictly went off of my beliefs and my background and my upbringing, I didn't agree with it and I thought it was wrong. But then now I realize that it's not, and that he is who he is, and I love him just the way he is, and I would never change him for the world, because he obviously makes me and everybody else better. Sorry, see, I knew you were gonna do this. And the reason why is, didn't matter if he was gay or straight or black or white or whatever, he accepts. He accepts every single person on the planet Earth for who they are. He doesn't judge. Zero judgment doesn't exist with that kid.
I love it.
So that's with me now. That's how I live my life, is I don't judge somebody on their race, their beliefs, their background, how they, that's, we're all the same. We're all exactly the same. We're exactly the same. Exactly the same. And without Grant, I knew that, right? We all knew that. We know that in our mind, but I wasn't living my life like that, because that wasn't what society tells us. So I would tell a parent or anybody that anybody struggling with anything, either coming out with it or living with it, once you find out about it, is just think about what you would be like if you were in their shoes, and be accepting of it. And I think once you accept it and you can help them, support them, love them, be with them, you're going to find that actually they're going to change your life, which is what Grant did to me profoundly. I think it came out, his coming out more changed me than it did him, right? He was still going to be gay. Nothing was going to change. Right. Whether I said yes or no, he was still gay.
Yeah.
Openly gay. But the profound effect it had on me and how it changed my life was because I was willing to accept it. And had I not accepted, you and I would be having a very different conversation today. Right. and my son would be living a very different life.
Yeah. On a Sunday not so long ago, you're sitting in church with Grant.
Yes.
Pastor delivers a message on this very topic.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us that story.
That was tough. That was really tough. Which I shared that publicly on my LinkedIn too. More not because obviously this is business and podcasts talking about our life and business and both and the stuff, but more about I wanted people to understand, you know, to accept people for who they are and that to support people in anything they do. But yeah, our church was doing a series called On the Table, and it was about the hard topics in life and the things that, you know, beliefs of Christianity and the things that we struggle with in society. And Grant lives in New York City, and he works for a company in New York, and he'd come home for the long weekend. It was President's Weekend, I think. So he'd flown home on Friday and was flying out on Monday. Did not look ahead to the church service to see what the pastor's message was going to be. Knew it was coming, but didn't know when. Grant had even asked us, well, when's it? We're like, we don't know. So we go to church Sunday morning. He's sitting right next to me, and guess what the sermon's about?
Of course.
There it is. Slaps us right in the face. So I had to sit through the service with my son right next to me listening to the service, which was amazing. And our pastor is amazing, but still difficult to hear, right? Like you and I, you wouldn't want to sit through a service if somebody was talking about something that affected your life.
Exactly.
You wear glasses and the whole service is about
yeah, how wrong it is to wear glasses. Yeah.
And then you start feeling
yeah,
bad.
Everybody sees my glasses now all of a sudden, right? Yeah.
So Grant listened to the whole service, took the whole service, did the whole service, was great. We got done. We went to lunch, we went to breakfast, we got done. And so Jay had been telling me, and I had been sharing openly in my storytelling group and with all you guys about my story with Grant and how I was going to try to turn that into something positive to help others. And so church service gets over. We kind of talk about a little. And then the next day, you know, we discuss it as a family. And then we do the storytelling group. And I had wanted to write, or I've always wanted to write a book, self-help, about my experience, my background, my life, and just to motivate people. And during that church service, they kept saying to me, I just kept thinking, okay, if I'm going to write a book or tell my story, it needs to include Grant. Like, yeah. This, my life is defined by this kid's story, but the story I'm telling is about my personal life. But the trials and tribulations, things happen to me young, yes, were horrible, and I've got through it, and I've stayed. But then to move to now, the later part of my life with Grant involved in what's happened to me, I mean, that's the defining moment. So I called Grant up when he got back to New York, and I said, hey, I want to publicly tell this story, but I want your blessing, and I want to make sure you're okay with it, and that, you know, behind it, and even if we could do a book to help other families, would you be interested in doing this? And he said, Dad, I would love it. I would love to do that. I would love to be involved. I want to do it. I think it's great. I'm super supportive of it. Let's do it. Wow. And he's been totally on board with me, which is amazing. So I'm hoping as I continue to share my story publicly, speaking or talking or different things, that I'll have Grant's portion of his story included with mine, and that we'll be able to openly share about how together we've got through this and about the impact it's made on both of our lives. I'm sure his story is just as profound as mine. I'm sure it had a huge impact on his life, but I'm only telling it from my side. So I'd like for Grant to eventually be able to tell how this affected him. Not coming out, this is the way we handled it.
Hadn't planned on doing this, and with the power of editing, I'll take it out if you choose not to. Would you mind looking in the camera, looking right at that little dot on the top of your camera, and talk to that individual right now who might be afraid, might not
come
out. Doesn't want to tell mom and dad, doesn't want to share it for fear. Talk to her or him right now. If you could just look at that little dot on your camera and open your heart to them.
I would tell you, you need to come out. You need to be open, honest with yourself. You are who you are. Share that with the world. Tell your family, tell your friends. Make sure you're heard. Do not live but trying to hide something. You are who you are. You're a human being, you're a person. However you were born and however you feel, I think you should express that. And I hope that everyone will accept you for it. But I think if you honestly come out and are open and honest about it, I think people will embrace you for it and they'll support you. I know I will.
Thank you for that.
And I think that's what people need to hear.
I do too. I think your message of love and your message of acceptance, you know, there's acceptance in that I turn the other way and I don't look. And there's acceptance of I look right at it and I realize what it is. It's just somebody's individuality. It's who they are. It, for some it might be, and I'm not talking about even this situation. We all have different crosses that we bear, you know, using the Christian analogy, because we both are, you know, and everybody, whether you're Christian or not, you understand that term, what cross do you bear?
Any religious, something
you're just carrying.
We all have some higher belief.
Yeah.
Right.
Gary Ridge, the former chairman and a dear friend of mine, chairman of WD-40, has a daily email he sends out. And one of the emails he sent recently, and he was a guest on the podcast early on, he said, it said something to the effect of, don't carry your mistakes with you. Not, and again, not making this a mistake, but don't carry your trials, your mistakes, your tribulations, whatever, with you. Lay them on the ground and use them as stepping stones to get to where you want to go. You know, so use those things that we learn, those challenges, your challenge as a child, your challenge learning and growing, you know, Grant's challenge of coming out and sharing with you and your wife and the world of, you know, his orientation. I think it's beautiful that we use whatever it is that we call a challenge as a stepping stone and as a learning tool for us, rather than just keeping it in our bag and having to lug it over our shoulder all day long.
Absolutely. And I think for Grant, like I said, I mean, he could speak, but I'm just saying, I'm pretty sure his life wasn't going to change in terms of, he was not going to not be gay if I told him I didn't accept it.
Right.
And he was going to still be who he is today. The defining moment in our life and him coming out and telling me, and what I think other families need to learn and know, and people to be accepting of anyone, of anything. It was the way I accepted, my family accepted, my wife, all of us accepted Grant. We could have went a different direction, and we could have tore the family apart, and we could be having a different story today if we didn't accept it. Ultimately, I decided to accept it, not knowing at the time what a profound effect it was going to have on my life, because I was just looking at safety of my child. Then to fast forward now, from he's 23 now, coming out with me at 15, the profound effect it's had on me, what other people need to understand is, be open to people that are different than you, and you may be, I know you will be amazed at how they will affect your life and make you a better person, even though that wasn't what you were expecting or wanted. You're ultimately going to be a better person if you're around them and you're accepting of whatever their challenge, condition, issue, life has, you're going to grow from it. And that's what I've learned.
Man, so many great sound bites from this episode. I might have to air this in like a year, because I could promote it with sound bites for so long before we actually air the episode. We will get this out to folks right away.
Well, let's hope Jay is okay with everything, because obviously I got a little long-winded on a few things. But when you're so passionate and it's coming from the heart, as you would say, and it's here, and I genuinely care and want to make a difference. You know, sometimes I get a little overwhelmed. If I was thinking from Jay's perspective, I would have made that a little better, but it is what it is.
That's all right. Stories are powerful because of their authenticity. You know, you can't practice and rehearse authenticity. You can practice and rehearse details. The authenticity just comes out.
Yeah. And I think that's one of the things that we openly share, which is what's nice about your podcast and the group that you and I associate ourselves with, is I think we all have huge hearts. I mean, you've become emotional on this. I've been emotional. You and I have connected at a much higher level. We talked about that. And we all are in it for the right reason. We all really care and have big hearts. And I think that's one of the reasons we're all drawn together and we do so much to help other people, is because we are really honestly passionate about what we do and we care.
I knew from what people told me about you and a little bit that I knew about you from the outside looking in, that I was just going to consider you someone that I absolutely just really love. And I will tell you that I do. I mean, I love
this
friendship we're developing, and I love what we have ahead of us as friends and opportunities to make an impact together, which is going to be pretty awesome.
Thank you. Well, and I've shared publicly too. I mean, obviously, you know, business being based, we're Orange County based, but the operation out in Redlands and living in Orange County, I've shared this openly too. And you and I are a perfect example of that. Is when I moved into Orange County, because I'm not from Orange County, I was a transplant. When I got in, I was often told, you know, people in Orange County, they're from Orange County, right?
Yeah, a little bit different. Yeah.
Different breed out there, those Orange County people.
Yeah. Right.
And then living in the community now for 7 years and recently moving my business there, corporate headquarters there, my offices, and networking with a lot of people in Orange County and being involved in a lot of boards and charities in Orange County. It's not the people in Orange County. It's the heart that's in Orange County. There is so many everywhere, but I'm specifically saying the group you and I are in. There's so many people with so many huge hearts that want to do so much good and help. If you hang with the right people, Doesn't matter where you're at or what you do. We all have the same heart and that they're together. Yeah. It's more a matter of, yeah, we're all in it for the same reason. And I really feel strongly about that core group that I'm associating myself with now.
Yeah. And I look at the people I've had a chance to interview on the podcast, friends that I have, nonprofit leaders, for-profit leaders, professors, educators, everyone I've been around in my career in Orange County and throughout. I've had the good fortune of working in a lot of different places all over the world. You find good people. You know, we typically find what we're looking for. You know, if I want to, it's the story of the guy who goes up to the top of the hill and, you know, I'm moving from city A to city B. What are the people like in city B? Oh, they're horrible. Well, anyway, we're going to find what we're looking for no matter what. A couple last things and we'll wrap up. Talking future a little bit, we all learned that term in business school, BHAGs, the big, hairy, audacious goals. For yourself, for your business, for your career, personal development, anywhere you want to go, is there one big, hairy, audacious goal out there that you have that you either haven't talked about or that you would like to share, or just something that's out there, writing a book or climbing Mount Everest or whatever that might be?
Well, for the business, my BHAG was much different 3 or 4 years ago. It was all revenue driven, right? Mm-hmm. So we have our strategic planning. I'm in a CEO group in Orange County. I have a coach. And so every year we do our strategic planning session, we'd set up, and my BHAG obviously was revenue driven, right? I mean, obviously that's Everybody that's in business is in business to make money. That's what we're in business to do. Or if you're type A like me and you're an entrepreneur, you want to see the business be quote unquote successful. So you want to grow. Right. Obviously, you can't stay certain size or have the business go backwards. So prior to a few years ago, my BHAG was revenue driven. Then one of the gentlemen in my CEO group questioned me and asked, he said, why are you doing that? Why are you driving the company by revenue? I'm like, well, that's what we're supposed to do. That's what you do in business. He said, but what's your passion? Is your passion to make money? I said, no, my passion is to help people. He's like, well, then throw the BHAG out the window. What do we care how much business you do? What do we care how much revenue you make? Is your impact helping people? Financially, I have to, you know, make the business function. I said, yeah, that's my BHAG, is I want to help as many possible people as I can. I want to meet as many people as I can so I can help people. So the BHAG went out the door a couple of years ago, and now it is my life's mission and my company's mission is to help people. Every day, we just help as many people as we can, and that's my BHAG, is to just help others. And then personally, obviously with my story with Grant, I would love to write a book from mine and his perspective. I would love to publish it for families who are struggling with anything and they need to figure out a way to come together and accept it. I think our story could impact a lot of people because we're willing to share it publicly. And then future for me, hopefully would be, I'm starting a foundation that we're going to be launching this year that I've shared a little bit on LinkedIn, but not a ton, a company corporate foundation to give back. But ultimately, I would like that to be a family foundation someday. And I'm hoping that, if the business is successful and we continue to do well, that we'll be able to help others. I hope that I can just use the foundation as a way to support causes that need to be supported and to get the word out. That's my long-term goal.
Well, the little bit I've known you and the lot I know about you, when you set a goal, you reach it. I'm going to own that company someday. You said as a probably 20 something year old when you were working for the company, now you own it. So if you're saying you're going to write this book and you're going to be forming a foundation that gives back, you're going to be doing it. What's the working title of the book that you want to write?
I don't know. That's a good question. I really honestly don't have any idea. I know for sure from talking to Jay and the storytelling group with you, I know I want it to be mine and Grant, both our sides of the story, how it affected his life and how it affected my life. Because obviously he profoundly was affected too, but I'd like it at his words. I don't have a title. And even if for a while until we can get to the book, even if it's just a matter of storytelling with everyone that we're telling in and we just get the story out and tell it, I'm just hoping that it makes an impact in people's life. And if we could just help one family, one mother, daughter, father, son, couple, whatever it is, help get through some sort of crisis in their life, then I feel like, Grant and I we're making a difference.
I got some ideas. I'll share them with you later.
Good. All right. I'm open to that. I have no idea for a book. And it's funny too, because what's another thing about being successful and entrepreneur CEO? Eventually you write a book, right? That's what everybody
says. Yeah, exactly.
But I was thinking selfishly of writing a book about how to overcome and to stay positive. Because from my former mentor, my CEO, like, if you ask any of my team here, I don't lose my temper. I don't get upset. I've never got mad. I've never yelled. My wife and kids will tell you. My daughter can tell you the one defining time in her 29-year life that I yelled. And my wife will tell you the one defining time in our 30-year marriage that I stay positive all the time. I don't yell. I don't get mad. I don't get upset. We just move on with life and we make it happen. So that's what I was trying to get out. But I realized the story is much bigger than me. The story is much, much bigger than me.
Ladies and gentlemen who watch and listen to this podcast, remember the power of mentorship and leadership. Go back to when Eric talked about that mentor that he worked for 16 years, who never was angry, who never raised his voice, who never, you know, always had control of his emotions. And Eric just described that he's the same way.
Now,
how much of that is because of that guy or not? I don't know.
A lot.
I'm guessing there's a lot. So we have more of an impact on people than we realize.
Yeah, because my team will say during the pandemic, and then, you know, we just had our great flood of 2023. I'm sitting in my freezing cold offices at 58 degrees where the walls are all tore open and 6,000 square feet of our building is destroyed. And we've been out of our offices for a month and we're working remote on folding tables and chairs. I mean, it's just been anyways, every day I come in, and when I come in the building, they say, how is it you stay so positive and you've yet to get upset? And I said, it's not going to change anything. It's not going to make anything better or different. If I get upset and get mad and start to pity, it's going to do nothing. All we have to do is every day come in and say, how can we help people? What do we have to do to make it happen? We need to do this every single day. And I just come in super positive with a great attitude in mind. I tell my team, what do we got to do? They tell me what we need, said, let's make it happen. And we move forward. And that's how I try to live every day.
Someone once told me, and I love this, and I'm going to finish with this and then ask you my last question. Every day we wake up and we have a rock in our hand and we have a choice of what to do with that rock. We can just hold on to it and do nothing with it. We can throw it into the water and see the beauty of the ripple of that rock hitting the water and the ripple and the impact that it has in its surroundings. Or we can throw it through a window and shatter the glass and see everything that breaks as a result of what we did. But every day we wake up with another rock in our hands, and what we do with that rock really can have an impact on so many other. We can hold it and not impact anyone with it, not share the beauty of the water rippling, or not destroy the lives of the glass shattering, but we have that rock every day. And what are we going to do with it? And for me, I just see that you're tossing it in the water every day. And that positive ripple and that sun glistening off of the ripples in the water is how I see you using that rock every day.
Than you. You know what I was envisioning me doing with it?
What?
Passing that rock to someone else. I could see myself taking the rock and handing it to somebody else and impacting their life and hoping that they take that one rock and pass it on to somebody else from what they learned from me and impact their life. And I see every morning, this is what I was envisioning, we're telling the story, getting up and getting a rock, me taking that rock and changing somebody's life. And then they use that to change. And then it just, right. And we just keep passing that rock.
Nice. I like it. I like it. And hope that nobody throws it into a window, right?
Yeah. Exactly. Or that my rock doesn't end up busting a window or breaking something. Yeah. Cause often, you know, we don't realize that these things that we say or do, it do impact somebody's life, and somebody's life may change from this, but they may never come publicly with their story. So you and I are never going to know, but maybe what we said or did impact their life and did change it. And we did make a difference. So we just have to accept and know that hopefully every day we are helping somebody, even if we're unaware of it.
Yeah. Well, we just spent an hour with you answering this question, but I got to ask it anyway. And you already knew it was coming, because I told you beforehand. And if you've listened to any of the episodes of the podcast before, you, Eric, or anyone else, you know this is the final question, and then I'll let you go.
I watched Jay's yesterday.
Nice. So you know where he went with it. So as we wrap up, first of all, I'm just going to say thank you from the bottom of my heart.
Thank you.
I thought about changing the name of my podcast, Bottom of My Heart, rather than From the Heart. But I'm just full of gratitude for this time that we've spent together, the friendship that we're building, and the friendship that we are building in the years to come.
Me too.
But as we wrap up, Eric Goodman, what's in your heart?
My heart is full today. My heart is very full. I am thankful, really. I'm very thankful for the people that have been placed in my life. I believe strongly that everything happens for a reason. And I believe that certain things and people are placed in our lives for certain things. Like I honestly believe Grant was brought into my life for a certain reason. I think I needed my eyes to be open, and he opened them for me. So my heart today is so full, and I am so thankful that people like you and Dawn and Charles and Jay, well, everybody in our group, David and Greg, I mean, just the people that I'm surrounded around and the people that have been brought into my life, my team here at Mountain View Services, my church, everyone that's there, I really believe, you know, we have a limited time here and we need to use it as best as we can. And the people that we choose to spend time with is very valuable. And I'm very warm in my heart that I have so many amazing people around me like you that make me a better person. And we, every day we can learn from someone. I mean, I do not know it all. People think, right, your team comes in. Well, you're the CEO. You know the answers to everything. Hmm. Okay, right, sure, I know the answer to everything. I do not know the answer. What I know is we just stay positive and we work through it and we figure it out. But it's those people that you surround yourself with that are able to make me do what we do.